Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Welcome to episode 125 of the Blue Jays Happy Hour podcast. I'm Nick Ashbourne, joined as always by Andrew Stoughton. We are coming to you at a point when the Blue Jays seem to win every series, but not sweep them, and win most games by scoring precisely 5 runs. Over the last 9 games, 8 of those have been a win with 5 runs scored or a loss with 6 runs against. That means absolutely nothing, but it does give us a sense of where they're at. And the protagonist at this particular moment in time for the Toronto Blue Jays is Dalton Varsho, who has seen his approval rating soar in recent weeks by hitting home runs, which is something that most people on the team are not doing. And combined with what he's accomplished in the field, he's been one of the very best all-around players in baseball so far. He's got the 13th best WAR by Fangraphs. Stoughton, what are you seeing with this run of Dalton Varsho's success?
I mean, I'm seeing what everybody else is seeing. A player who kind of reminds me of like the swings in results of Colby Rasmus, a touch with good defense, and sometimes he hits home runs, and then sometimes it just looks awful, which is something I think we maybe heard whispered a little bit when that trade was first announced. But obviously, you know, good Colby was good and good Varsho was good, right? And it's he's absolutely been carrying them for sure. The defense looks great. Not sure they needed to bring in a second center fielder when he's so good covering ground. And you know, obviously looks great in left too. But you know, that's an issue that's probably going to have to be addressed. I mean, Kiermaier has like kind of gotten out of his early season funk a little bit. But that's still obviously something that's going to be in the back of everybody's mind, especially as you like look at guys, and I'm sure we'll talk about guys potentially knocking on the door from AAA. But for Varsho, yeah, it's great. It's great to just have, you know, a bit of positivity about him and about that trade. It's going to be, you know, it's likely going to be brief unless he keeps it up. I mean, it's very directly correlated to his performance on the field, but that's why nobody's been real positive about it since he arrived here, because last year was a real slog, even though he's obviously like a ridiculously valuable player, even when he's not hitting well. But it is sort of, that was the thing that captured the imagination about him as a player when they acquired him, was that, yeah, if you can combine the hitting with the defense, then that really is kind of like a true star caliber profile. It's been tough to not see it as often as we have, but you know, you get a sense now why the Jays were so high on this guy as to give up, you know, a guy like Gabriel Moreno. Gurriel, we can leave aside. And also, I think, very important to remember, this is a tangent that's just, you know, my petty gripes, but the Gurriel component of that trade is done now, right? Like, he was 1 year, so you can't be like, oh, he's still out there hitting for them. No, that anybody could have signed him. That's just, I'm making a tangent to to a straw man at the moment, but
it is, yeah, true, I mean, it
looks
like,
good. It is true, though. Yes.
People sometimes, when they perceive trades, they just put the player's name to that trade, and that's not necessarily what was traded, because what is really getting traded is a certain number of years from a certain player under a specific contract. And while that sounds like a really boring way to perceive trades, that is absolutely how MLB front offices do. You know, that's a huge part of the Varsho appeal as well, right? Was that he was under team control for a significant amount of time. And if he hits at all, he's going to be meaningfully underpaid over that time. And that's what the Blue Jays were getting with that deal. Like you, I don't really perceive Varsho as, you know, a changed man per se. You know, if you look at all these home runs he's hitting, 5 of the 6 this year have been between 370 and 392 in terms of feet. None of them have been harder than 105.9 miles per hour. Like, he's not hitting the ball differently. A big part of why the results have been better is he's done a lot better against fastballs. Like, I think his run value this morning against four seamers is +7 according to Baseball Savant, and like that has lived in the negatives over the last couple of years. So you are seeing him, you know, turning on fastballs, not popping them up as much, and that's positive. But also, again, the pitches he's hit these home runs off of, we're talking, you know, a lot of 92, 93, 94. Like, that he hasn't, you know, seen 100 miles an hour at the top of the zone and been all over it, and you're thinking, oh wow, he's really getting ready earlier. You know, doing the Jose Bautista thing, for instance, where he's getting, meeting the ball out in front of the plate a lot better, things like that. I think this is just like a really good Varsho streak, which, you know, because he started so poorly last year, he really got in a hole from a Blue Jays fan sentiment perspective. And so I think it's kind of nice for him that he's starting this season well in a way that is making people appreciate a little bit that this can be a very high level player. And, you know, that there's a reason that he was in 2022 kind of, yeah, hovering around that all-star level of overall production, because the defense is just ridiculously good. And it's fun to watch, in part because you know that he's not a gazelle out there who, you know, is galloping at, do gazelles gallop? They're quick.
I think so. Yeah. There's a gallop to that.
Yeah. Know, so honestly, he's not galloping around with that like raw speed elegance combo that we all associate with gazelles. He's doing it, you know, with instincts and with jump. And that's kind of cool to watch people who don't have maybe the greatest quote-unquote natural gifts still achieve an incredibly high level performance through skill. Like, he is a skilled defender, which is odd because often we associate elite defense at the MLB level with some kind of incredible athletic gift.
True. And you know, and you don't, it's hard to see skill in terms of defense a lot, but just the fact that he, you know, it's such an outlier, it seems, in terms of like you could, where you can physically like see with your own eyes like the jumps that he's making, and I recognize that they are not the same as other people's jumps, is something really to behold. It's been quite great. And, you know, yeah, I think, you know, like you say about the hitting, obviously that's the thing that's going to get focused on because the defense is kind of already just taken for granted that that's going to be there. Maybe not to the extent that, you know, people recognize that he's like, he was like a 4-win player last year. I think Baseball Reference had him a little lower than Fangraphs did, or maybe the other way around. But, you know, even as like an 82 weighted runs created plus hitter or whatever it was, it was certainly not enough, but still very valuable in that sense. But yeah, the hitting thing, like, yeah, you're right that it doesn't feel like he's like that much of a changed hitter or a changed hitter necessarily at all, except he wasn't punishing those fastballs last year at all. So that is good. And I think you're absolutely right about, you know, the hole that he was in and just the way that that sort of changes perceptions. You know, Brandon Belt got out of that last year because it only lasted a couple of weeks, and it was much worse for Varsho. And it takes a really long time to dig out if your numbers are looking like they, you know, they're sub league average, even if you can go and have a really great, you know, season for weeks and months beyond that. If it still takes you that long to climb out of that hole, it's tough. We saw the opposite last year where, you know, Matt Chapman had such a great April and he kind of coasted on it, and it took a while before people really appreciated how bad he had been going in, you know, May, June, July. By the end, I think people had sorted that out. But yeah, it there is definitely a lag there, and definitely, like, as tough as it is, the narrative does get written a lot in April, because that's just, there's only that much information to go on, and it does color everything that comes after it.
Yeah, and he has maybe that Matt Chapman season potentially in him, right? Where he, you know, like, not necessarily in the worst way, but like if he kind of reverts to an average-ish, slightly above average hitter, the hitter he's generally been through most of his career from here on out, he's already banked, you know, 1/8 of the season plus of being a 154 WRC plus guy. So his results may always look kind of at least respectable as long as he doesn't go into a deep slump. And with that defense, I think that in terms of the fan sentiment, which is not, you know, what the team cares about, it's not what matters at the end of the day, but this PR turnaround has a good chance to stick because he, you know, even if he does the, you know, the Chapman thing where he really doesn't hit as much as the season goes on, he's already banked a, you know, a relatively sizable part of the season at an excellent level of production, and he's always going to have those defensive highlights to go off of, which means that, yeah, by the end of this year, I mean, I'm sure people are still going to check in on Gabriel Moreno and see how he's doing, and they'll still have thoughts about that deal, but there's just such a good opportunity for the, yeah, the sentiment and the opinions around that deal to shift this year, even with just 23 games of strong production.
Absolutely. I mean, I think Alejandro Kirk could really have some say in that as well, because they it does. The perception is, and probably correctly, is that they chose Kirk over Moreno and, you know, valued his, you know, the amount of experience he had in the big leagues over Moreno's, you know, potential. You know, in a year that they considered themselves championship contenders, didn't necessarily want to bring in a rookie catcher, which, you know, weird because he did go to the World Series in Arizona, which I think everybody kind of noticed. They didn't notice that the Diamondbacks went like 32 and 39 in the second half. They just sort of saw them in the World Series and thought, oh, well, this is obviously a great up-and-coming young team who's, you know, I think their offseason really has propelled them into maybe being like that, like a kind of a Baltimore Orioles situation. But yeah, Kirk can definitely change some opinions, I think, on that trade as well. It'll make the decision to pick him over Moreno look a little more sensible if he ever really starts hitting.
If Varsho is probably the best story around the Blue Jays right now, I mean, you could put Jose Berríos in that camp as well, but it's the position players that I think fans want to see because they have this idea that the pitching is generally going to be solid. The other side of that coin, the worst story going around the Blue Jays right now is what's happened in the bullpen thus far, where the team is, and WAR is not the right way to evaluate relievers, but they are second last in the majors as we record in Fangraphs WAR at a -0.7, and the ERA is 5.16. And the idea was that, you know, bringing back Romano and Swanson would settle everything down. Things would fall into place. You already had Garcia rolling, and there was reason to expect that this was going to be a really, really good group. And I'm not saying that that's not going to happen over the longer course of the season, but I want to do an exercise we've done a few times, which is a little bit of a confidence check with the guys on the roster right now in terms of where you feel, how you feel when they come into the game. Because I think that's a big part of a fan experience when you're watching a bullpen, is someone can tell you the ERA of a pitcher, they can tell you, you know, what they've done over the last few outings or whatever it is, but the experience when you're watching the game and a certain pitcher comes in is, it's a little bit more visceral, I think, than the numbers necessarily allow for. So I'm going to go down sort of in reverse order of high leverage, based on the roster resource depth chart. Starting with Bowden Francis, we're going to go 1 to 10. I'll allow decimals in the 0.5s, but I, you know, like, I don't think anyone needs a 7.2.
Bowden Francis ain't getting that.
That was an arbitrary example. But where are we at with Bowden Francis?
I didn't want to use decimals, but I'll give him a 3.5, I guess, because I think I got 4 saved up for some other guys. And you know, I don't think he's necessarily been awful, and his leverage is appropriate. But I'm not real pleased anytime he goes into the game, right? And I also feel that, like, you know, we saw there the other week with their last week with the whole controversial Chad Green being out. And so they went right to Swanson straight off the DL or the IL, and you know, which was completely normal and realistic and just a thing you would completely expect. And yet people were like, how can you dare possibly do that? Which they wouldn't have had Swanson pitched and things gone well. Nobody would have been like, wow, they really dodged a bullet there. They shouldn't be doing that. Like, it would just have passed like nothing, but because he pitched poorly and because there wasn't Green. And anyway, we're kind of covering old ground here, but I think it was telling that Francis was not brought into that game. And though partly that was due to the fact that they wanted him to piggyback with Yariel Rodriguez, I think it also says something about what they actually believe in him and how, where their confidence level is So I'm saying 3.5. I don't think it's real high.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's worth going lower than that. So I'll match you there. Like, you know, the expected ERA is a little bit better than the ERA, which is ugly. He is striking out a fair amount of guys, but you know, the control is an issue. Like he's walking a lot of guys. He's missing his spots. He's got two pitches that work, sort of. He's more interesting in that he can give you multiple innings when that's something you need, especially with Mitch White off the roster. And so, you know, there isn't that huge glut of multi-inning guys that there was earlier in the season. So there's some utility there, but I don't know. There's a lot of guys I feel like could give you approximately what Francis gives you. Next up on the list is a guy who would normally be listed higher when it comes to expected leverage, and that is Tim Mayza, the long-standing Blue Jay drafted in 2013.
Yeah, I think it's been a little bumpy, obviously, for him so far this year. But I'm still at like a 6 with him. Maybe that's a little high, just because it hasn't been going well at the moment. But I was very down on Mayza, especially coming out of 2022 into 2023, and then he just was so dependable last year and just kind of always the guy he always is, or the same guy that he always is. And so I don't really feel super negative that he's not going to just get back to that, you know, and he'll just start clicking anytime soon. So I'm okay with Mason, but to a point, obviously, because I'm giving him a 6.
I'll go 5. I'll go one lower. Like he hasn't really been good this season at any point. He's not even getting the ground balls, which is normally his thing. Velocity has been spotty. It's been a little bit better recently than it was right out of the gate, so that's notable. But you know, he really needs to get ground outs, because he's not going to strike guys out at a reliable rate, and the you know, the control hasn't been there either. If Tim Mayza is coming into a close game at this moment, and I'm John Schneider, I'm not feeling great about that situation. And I know that he took some heat for that Aaron Judge hit in that big spot where they didn't bring Bowden Francis in, as he mentioned. I thought that was actually just like a good pitch, and Aaron Judge is really good at hitting. But yeah, I don't know. Yeah, he has not shown much this year. You're right to point out that he gave them really quality work last season. But yeah, he's dropped to a relatively ugly 5 for me. Next up, Nate Pearson. Who was back from AAA, did not cover himself in glory in his first outing back.
No, he didn't. And, you know, I mean, for me, he's a 5. Just literally, you know, 50-50 whether I think he's going to do anything, you know, in the good side of the ledger or not, right? And a lot of people were not there. A lot of people were a lot more confident with him when he was, you know, went away. I think people are sort of, in many cases, inclined to think that the people running the team are bozos and morons, and so that obviously taking Nate away, they've ruined themselves by taking away a great leverage pitcher who had that one really good outing against the terrible Rockies, and he did have some better outings before that, but it's been up and down with the velocity in particular. You know, he's a different guy when it's sitting at 98, 99 than when it's at 95, 96 or whatever, even if it's a little higher. Would love to see it all click. Thought it was premature that people felt that because based on one outing against the Rockies that it had. So I think he's in an appropriate sort of spot leverage-wise as well. And that's a platform from which, for as long as he stays up and with the injury to Green, it doesn't really make me... I'm not real super confident that he's going to be going down anytime soon this time. He can work his way into that mix as a leverage guy and a more important guy, but just haven't, for me, seen the confidence or seen the consistency to be confident in him as yet.
I'm going to go a decent amount higher. I'm going to go 6.5 with Pearson. Part of it is that his last outing is the only time he allowed any runs this season. You know, he's sitting on a 2.35 ERA with a 3.31 FIP. Part of that is the no home run thing, and that's kind of inconsistent. Yeah, I just thought his outing against the Padres was a kind of a gruesome outing where he lost the strike zone. But if you leave that one alone, he's been pretty solid for the course of the year. And, you know, I'm probably biased a little bit because I was there at that Rockies outing and I was really blown away with the stuff that he was showing in that outing. not just the fastball, but the breaking stuff as well. You know, again, when he's, like you said, when he's averaging kind of 98, 99, like he sure looks difficult to hit, especially for right-handed hitters. I don't think that he's someone that you are going to reach for in every big spot, but sort of, as I said, this exercise is gut feeling, and gut feeling when Pearson comes into the game, I feel like it'll be a good outcome for the Blue Jays, chances are. But I acknowledge there's a level of inconsistency there, so I'm not willing to go to 7, which is kind of the threshold for good, I guess. I'm trying to think, like 70% being sort of a respectable grade in school. I don't know. There's been grade inflation and whatnot, so I don't know. I don't know. I'm not qualified to comment on our education system at this point, but I'm in this exercise, I'm considering 7 to be kind of good and Pearson to be just sub good at this point, but able to make, as you said, like a run to a bigger role in relatively short order, right? Like it wouldn't take too many outings of Pearson looking lights out for both of us, I think, to feel significantly more confident. Okay, Genesis Cabrera, the number one lefty in the bullpen these days.
It turns out, yeah, like a 7.5, I feel like. Maybe he just hasn't really pitched in spots that are as gut-wrenching as some of the other guys, and I can elide some of the not as great outings, but I don't feel bad when he comes into the game at all. There's not a stat I can point to. There's not an outing that I can point to make me feel good or bad. But he has been a nice guy to have around with Tim Mayza kind of struggling to, you know, out of the gate a bit.
I'm putting him right in the Mayza bucket, so I'm going to give him a 5. Like he's not striking anyone out this year yet. Again, it is a small sample. I expect that will come around to some degree. But you know, that's an issue. The walks are okay, but you know, the command is, you know, it's more of a control than a command situation at this point. A couple home runs that can really hurt your stats. I realize that in a lot of his outings he has been decent, and so he's been hurt by the home run ball, like his one really rough outing against Houston early in the season. But yeah, you know, the guy's got a 9 ERA, and before the Blue Jays picked him up last season, he was really struggling. Like there's a reason why he was available for them to scoop up for nothing. And so like he is not like Mayza, where there's a consistent track record over multiple years of him being really good. Like I feel about as good about Cabrera as he's pitching in any given moment. Like he just doesn't get a lot of leeway from me because he has been excellent at times in his career, but it has been quite a while since it was like, oh, year after year, this is a guy who you like in the bullpen.
Yeah, that's fair. I probably am a little too high on him just because I don't really ever think about Genesis Cabrera. Which, you know, that's my fault. I'll knock it back to a 7. Let's do that.
But he's
that's
even he's still upset feeling about
based
that.
On what, based on everything you said. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm sure he is.
He's absolutely devastated. Next man up is Trevor Richards.
Ooh, he's like a 6. He's like a Toronto 6, but a Peterborough 9. I don't know. I Trevor Richards has been fine. He's Trevor Richards. At no point will he ever make me feel like, you know, I mean, I guess there have been runs where he's been really well, really doing well. And really, I think before he went on the IL last year was quite a good time. And he's been, you know, he's been solid mostly for the last couple of years. But never a guy I'm going to not have some trepidation about when he comes into a game like that. I just don't think he has that in him. So I'll go with the 6.
I'm going to give him a 6.5, but I think there's a little bit of a rationality to that, in the sense I feel like he maybe deserves a little bit more. Like, it, you know, it's a 3.60 ERA this year, expected ERA of 2.97. The contact off of him, and, you know, it's a very small sample, but it has been dreadful. Like, he's done a really good job of managing contact. That's something you have to see over a longer period of time, but it's also just runs in stark contrast to his reputation.
Yes.
So that does feel notable to me. The fact like the expected slugging off him is 215 and the WOBA on contact 274. Like he's really getting guys to squib the ball, and the changeup is a little bit new. I wrote about this at Sportsnet a couple weeks ago. Like he's really slowed it down, which is an odd thing to do with a changeup, but it It's been working. It's moving in a really cool way. Like it almost looks a little bit more like a curveball these days. The problem is that he just hasn't been able to control it, right? So the walk rate is really high right now. It has not been low for him in a couple of years. Some of that's baked in. But yeah, I feel good about him missing bats, and I feel good about the contact that he's allowing. The issue is just is the walks. So I'd be willing to, if he, you know, in his next 10 innings only walked one guy, I would start to feel like, oh, wow, okay, we might be looking at kind of a different Trevor Richards, and that's a nice development. But until he gets the walks under control, it's hard to send him too far. The next guy on the list is Eric Swanson.
Eric Swanson. You know, I have a lot of a willingness to give leeway to someone who's just fresh off the aisle, had a very abbreviated, a very strange, especially because of the whole situation with this kid getting hit by that car, like a weird spring. You know, if you mean this, you know, and if the exercise is this moment, him coming in from the bullpen, it's probably more like a 6, but I'm going to give him a 7, and I expect that to rise as, you know, he gets deeper into the season and just more ground under his feet and becomes more the guy that we've known for the last year or two with the Blue Jays and before that with Seattle. I mean, he's a very, very effective reliever. I'm basing this on no stats. I haven't looked at any of the stats. I'm basing it on just pure gut feel, but I'm okay with Eric Swanson.
Yeah, and to be honest, you know, he's pitched 2.1 innings. I don't think you can look at this. And I know that, you know, I've been parsing some small samples a little bit as we go here, but 2.1 innings straight off the IL, I think you almost have to throw the results out completely. And there's not much evidence to suggest that his stuff is different or diminished in any way. So, yeah, I'll go to a 7.5 with him. I would have been, it would have been preferable to see him come out and have a couple strong outings right away if you want to have that confidence level in him that you had last season. But I think we'll get there. Like, it's not going to take very much for me to say in 2 weeks, like, okay, Eric Swanson is Eric Swanson, quality setup man, cool, let's go.
Yes.
So the next guy, I think I would be surprised if he doesn't get the highest marks potentially on this list, and that is Jimmy Garcia.
Yeah, oh, he's absolutely getting the highest marks. I mean, there's some baked-in Jimmy Garcia-ness to it, I think. But he's like a 9 at this point for me. I mean, that's grading on a curve with the rest of this bullpen a little bit. But he's just been fantastic, throwing harder, and you know, everybody has seen it. You know, it's certainly more innings than Swanson so far. You feel good when he comes into the game. I think that there's like 9 is high for any reliever, but I think he's earned that.
Yeah, I'm with you 100%. If you want to really nitpick, you can say there's been some hard contact, but realistically, he's consistently blowing guys away. He's not walking anybody. He looks better than he has at any time with the Blue Jays. This is one of the better stretches of his career overall, you could say. You know, in his very brief time in Miami in 2020, he had a similar run like this. I don't know if it means like he must be the closer, like some people are banging the drum for that. I think they've done a good job in terms of having him face the most difficult hitters, kind of regardless of when that is. Like, you've seen him come out in the 7th or the 8th instead of the 9th, even before Romano is around, because that's when the dangerous guys were coming to the plate. And I like that usage for him. I like him as potentially kind of a fireman type of guy. There, you know, as far as Blue Jays this season go, he's one of those players where there's just nothing you could reasonably complain about with him.
100%, yeah. I think you're right, though, too, about the usage. Like, it's kind of perfect, right? Because he's not a guy who is going to demand being the closer. I think it's silly to want your best reliever to be the closer. People make such a big deal about it. It's like, I'd rather him face Soto and Judge in the 7th than be saved to face the bottom of the order in the 9th, right? Like, that's I don't understand the mentality of, like, wanting your best reliever to necessarily not face the most difficult part of the lineup. And I know that it gets difficult and guys, you know, the closers get paid and saves get paid, and you know the title is probably important, and it's easier said than done to be like, oh, we're just going to mix and match and do it by committee and sort of do it by situation. But they have a guy who is their closer. They got the big light show. It's not going to be anyone but Jordan Romano for a while. So that allows them to use Garcia perfectly.
And the last man is the one you referenced right there, Jordan Romano.
Yeah. I'll preface this by saying I've had the argument with people. Like, people are, you know, it's not ever easy, it feels, sometimes for him, especially in the last couple of years. He gets the job done. You look down, up and down at the stats, you know, maybe not necessarily this year as yet, but he's barely pitched so far. And he converts a ton of saves, he gets saves, doesn't have a ton of meltdowns. I mean, if you look at the leaderboards about like just strictly results, he gets the job done. And some of the other peripherals are not as elite as other, you know, all-star caliber closers. But he gets the job done, and yet it does, you know, I would be lying if I didn't say that, like, when he first returned to the lineup and to the bullpen and came out of the bullpen for his first outing of the season, I'd be lying if I said I wasn't kind of like, here we go, let's see what happens. And it was another, you know, wild ride for a little bit, and that's just sort of the par for the course with him. So like, I gotta give him like a 6.5, but that's probably unfair because his reputation and his track record suggests much, much better than that. But he does give me heart palpitations from time to time, more often than I would prefer.
He's gonna be an 8 for me. I think so that's far fair, he yeah. hasn't been impressive. I understand that. Again, similar to Swanson, we haven't seen much. It's off the IL, and there's not a lot to indicate that there's a meaningful diminishment in his stuff. So I probably would have said 9 before the season. I understand exactly where you're coming from, though. There is this gap between how it feels to watch Jordan Romano and what his results are. And his results are fantastic. Like, he's a top really kind of 15 yeah. reliever in the majors over the last 3 years, maybe even top 10. And some of, like you said, some of the elite closers could be slightly better on peripheral stuff. But even by some of the markers that are about, you know, FIP and things that are, you know, strikeouts, walks, home runs, like that kind of stuff, like he grades out well. Like, he's a very, very good reliever. And it is kind of funny because, you know, he's the hometown kid. He's in the big splashy role. He's generally succeeded in that role. He hasn't been the one who's generally led to the big playoff blowups that have made Blue Jays fans so sad over the last few years. Yeah. It generally has, like, it's the level of hostility towards him. Hostility might be too strong, but kind of ambivalence and doubt towards him is a little bit odd because he seems like the type of player that it'd be very easy for the fan base to just be behind. But there's that, the level of nerviness with some of his outings. And I think that one thing that leads to that is that he's not necessarily elite at preventing base runners.
Like, there's a lot of traffic.
There's traffic with him because his walk rate is a little bit higher than you'd probably like. But he is elite at keeping the ball in the park. And that is a skill that you can't really watch. You can't watch the ball not leave the park. And so I think people, it's very easy for people to get nervous about the walk that he allowed or the hit batter or, you know, the double or whatever, and have those kind of shaky innings as opposed to the closer who comes in. His command is worse than Romano's. He's less cautious maybe than Romano is at times, throws the ball over the plate and the guy just golfs it out and it's one run out of the three. And then they're like, oh, that's not a big deal because that just happened. It's over and the rest of the inning was fine. Whereas a Romano one run allowed is often, you know, maybe a guy on base and then a steal and then another hit. You know what I mean? Like, it's a protracted thing. And I think that that adds to the cumulative anxiety he has created as a Blue Jays pitcher.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And I mean, part of it is also, you know, recency bias. Like last year, I'm just looking it up. Like last year, his whip was 1.22. He was BABIPed a bit compared to the rest of his career. You know, it was 292 was his BABIP, up from like 250s. The previous years, and yeah, it did feel like there was a lot of traffic, and that does lead to the anxiety. But as you say, Results are just, they're always there, and it's not like it's a fluke. Like, he has really good stuff, and he does keep the ball in the ballpark, and he does do all those other things well. He can strike guys out when he needs to. It just feels a bit shaky. It's like I want that first year BJ Ryan, not the third year post TJ BJ Ryan, where he was kind of, you know, still got a lot of the job done, but didn't look quite as elite and as dominant doing it.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, first year BJ Ryan was something else.
Everybody would want that.
A number of memories that are almost certainly false about that. Like, I have a memory of BJ Ryan throwing an immaculate inning where no one took a swing. That can't possibly be right.
People would still be talking
about that to the day if that happened. It might have been a situation where there was like one swing and two balls, you know what I mean? Where he struck multiple guys out looking or something. I don't know. But that's a very strong false memory of mine. One of my strongest.
I mean, he was incredible that year. And now he's just sort of very forgotten.
Yeah. And, you know, bad contract, yada, yada, yada. Not a huge thing for the franchise.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Couple more things before we get out of here. One of the guys that I think we need to touch on this week who has been very much in the discussion is Aurelvis Martinez. And I know that Ben Nicholson-Smith at Sportsnet recently wrote a piece kind of about how close these guys are. And there's a little bit of cold water being poured on this, but there's a lot of fan excitement. You know, it's like Josh Toley all over again right now. with the amount of home runs this guy's hitting, I believe as of recording, he had a 168 WRC plus, something in that range. And it's interesting just because his history has always been like a little bit of an adjustment period and then finding his footing at each level that he goes to. And it seems like that's what's happening again. He's got, you know, 6 home runs across 18 games. He is this raw power hitter. That is something the Blue Jays are lacking. I understand how people are connecting dots here. I'll also say that as a podcast, we haven't had a pet prospect in a while. We flirted with Martinez at times. Where are you with the Aurelvis Martinez buzz?
I mean, I'm ready to jump on the bandwagon with several more weeks of elite performance like that. I mean, you know, look at Jackson Holliday struggling out of the gate. I mean, the jump from the majors to, or from AAA to the majors is huge. And like, people in the, I've been looking, especially in the last couple of years, I think maybe with the robot umpires or whatever, but like, you look at International League stats and there's like video game numbers down there. So it's easy, I think, to get a little carried away with what these guys can do. I think like the David Schneider thing certainly helped nudge people into the realm of thinking that those are a little more meaningful than they are, because he just came out up and hit so well. You know, we're seeing Ernie Clement not necessarily, you know, doing well, but not necessarily being close to the guy who was putting up the numbers that he was in AAA last year.
Ernie is mashing by his own standards. The power is true. There. He's interesting.
He very much is, but he's also not, you know, like 330, 400, 500, or whatever it was last year in AAA. It's just, it's not like that. And I thought DM Fox, who does, what did it used to be called? He writes on prospects. I'm drawing a blank stupidly because I know him well. But it's like Blue Jays from Way? No, that's a different guy. Doesn't matter. Future Blue Jays is what he would do. That's right. And he posted something that, like a chat that he had with Joe Scalfani, the farm director, about how, you know, what goes into the process of promoting guys. And I think that's probably more about like internal, like from one level to the next. But, you know, he really details, you know, the process of contacting people throughout the organization, getting feedback, getting, you know, he calls it a robust process, and like thinking about goals, thinking about all sorts of, every little angle is dissected in terms of like what the Blue Jays like cover in, before they make a decision whether to, you know, to pull that lever and move somebody up a level. And this is the biggest level. And sometimes it's just out of necessity, obviously, right? And there's perhaps a case, you know, with the way the Blue Jays offense is going, if it takes any kind of a step back, that maybe it will be a necessity to bring somebody in who can actually, you know, have real in-game power that Martinez clearly does have. And that's going to be very useful, even if, you know, the batting average at first is not necessarily going to be the prettiest thing. And I think that it's instructive to look at how they really think about, you know, and put time into sort of getting set to make that decision and don't take it lightly. And I think you see, like I mentioned, Holiday, but also Martinez himself, like two springs ago, or maybe even three springs ago, when everybody was like, he's ready, call him up. And then he went out and like sort of fell flat on his face in his first taste of AA. Like, but in the spring, he did look like he was ready. And I think that it's very easy for people to assume that guys are ready and not appreciate what the jump really is to the big leagues, and how tough it's going to be to just not just hang around on the roster, but even get playing time that he needs. I think there's a lot that's going to go into the considerations about it. And it's looked great so far. It's still, you know, not even 100 plate appearances for guys in a month, in 6 weeks, in hell, maybe even 3 weeks. The conversation could be very different, I think. But for now, for me, you got to just keep letting him mash, and that will eventually, you know, it will solve itself. Either he'll stay hot and they'll have to do it, or he won't. But I think it's too soon to really be thinking seriously about him coming up.
Yeah, you know, he's a 22-year-old and he's played 73 games in his career at AAA. And the first run of that, which was what we saw last year, he was kind of narrowly above average. And so there's plenty of, as you said, runway for him to keep doing what he's doing, and there is a point where he forces hands. But also, as much as the Blue Jays lineup has not been impressive, the positions that he potentially plays have been relatively strong. Like, there is not a sense of urgency of like, oh god, the second base third base mix is a disaster, which is something people feared for, you know, quasi at least legitimate reasons entering the season. It has not been the case, and so I understand people being like, power, they need Aurelvis Martinez. But yeah, he needs more time. And it is one of the areas where, you know, people like us, and I think almost anyone covering the sport, and even prospect writers, and I'm not trying to diminish what anyone does, but I think a little bit of humility is required. Like, it is an area where it is exceedingly difficult for a less professional eye to be like, okay, this person is ready for the difference between a AAA breaking ball and a major league breaking ball. Like, it's not about service time manipulation, we know at this point, or anything like that. Yeah, it's not a Vladdy situation where he was just making an absolute mockery of the leagues he was playing in. Like, Martinez has been very, very good, especially recently, and this is impressive. It bodes well for his future. All that is true. But I think a lot of people are saying, call him up now, who don't necessarily have enough information to make that declaration with the kind of confidence they're making it with. Now, should that be a surprise that people are saying, overstating their level of knowledge and expertise about something? No, it should not be. But I think this is an area in baseball where it really does happen fairly consistently. I'm interested to see what he does in the majors. I think it'll probably happen at some point this season, to be honest, just the way that he's going, and he'll have, you know, kind of a full season worth of AAA at some point this year. I want to see it. I'm interested. I will say, from a podcast perspective for us, I think better branding would be to get on the Addison Barger train. It would give us a little bit more hipster credibility, and the results have been fairly similar to his credit.
Yeah, that's true. No, Barger. And I think that the defense is probably in a better place. Like, that's something. I mean, we all rolled our eyes, like you said, about Vlad, and because he was making a mockery of it. And the thing that they kind of clung to as a reason why they weren't calling him up was that his defense wasn't ready. I do think in the Aurelvis case that it is that. I mean, he can't be the DH. Justin Turner has to play every day or thereabouts. He's not going to be the Vogelbach role, which, because one, there's just not enough at bats, and two, that's a lefty off the bench, which is kind of theoretically important, even though we really haven't seen that necessarily so far and see the need for that. But yeah, I think the defense is a real thing, and it is funny, you know, just to talk. I get it. Like, you get excited about the prospect, and the guy who hit a similar number of home runs over the last week in the majors, who, like, you despised all of last year as a hitter. You're probably more realistic on that because there isn't the unknown of potential there, because you've seen him at his worst, and you're kind of like, people, you know, it's very easy to be like, oh, this is great from Dalton Varsho. He's having a hot streak for a little bit of time. Nobody is like, this is what he's going to be, and they need to keep him playing every day, and they don't have that fear in their mind that it's not going to collapse back into what we've seen before last season, right? Whereas I think it's easier to get a little carried away on a guy like Aurelvis, because, you know, even though he has had those, you know, when he first goes up to a level, had those issues where he doesn't immediately have success. We just haven't seen that lack of success, especially for the last couple of years. He's looked really good and is still really young and has really put himself on the prospect map and all sorts of great things to think about him. But yeah, I think it's still a work in progress, even at the plate, and he'll get his chance this year, like you say, and hopefully do really well. But I don't think that he should be lifted up and held up as a guy who's going to come in and they're going to finally score more than five runs.
Part of that context is the reality that the Jays lineup has not been particularly impressive this year, you know, and coming off last season where that was a disappointment as well. They're 22nd in the majors in runs as we record. And the biggest part of that, at least from my perspective, you know, you could point to an Alejandro Kirk or Kevin Kiermaier as guys who are really struggling, but George Springer, Bo Bichette, and Vladdy have combined for a .223 batting average, .317 on base, .340 slugging this season. So that's a 98 WRC plus somehow. I think people haven't necessarily talked enough about how offense has been down early going, but that can happen in April with cold weather and whatnot, so I don't think we necessarily know what the environment is at this point. How worrying should that be to the Blue Jays that we're an eighth of the way through the season and these guys that they're building the offense around have really not stood out? And of that group, where is your greatest concern lying?
Yeah, there are two guys who I am not terribly worried about. I know a lot of people probably are, and they get probably the most ink of it. You know, Bo's just been so consistent over his career, even when he's been inconsistent. I would say, you know, he had, I think it was 2022 that he had I tweeted this the other day, he had like a 104 weighted runs created plus on like August 20th, but finished at 130, really, really turned his season around at the end of the year, which, you know, nobody wants to be him to be a league average hitter for the rest of, you know, for the rest of the next like 3-4 months. But, you know, it's there. He can have sort of more average-ish times, and that'll be fine. Vlad, everybody gets down on weighted runs created plus, still looks pretty good. I was not entirely serious. I mean, obviously not as good as Bryce Harper, but I've compared their two, their first 2,700 or 2,900 plate appearances, and they're pretty similar, and it's a guy who had some ups and downs. And just to make the point that, you know, it's not always super easy for the generational hitter, which is like the term that people love to seize on with Vlad, because he's apparently not that, which he maybe isn't that, but also the track record is still very strong, even if it's like disappointing in the context of what everybody sort of hoped he could be and saw he could be in 2021. So those guys, honestly, as much as we do, you know, everybody gets in Vlad's head, but those guys don't bother me. I don't think that there's going to be a long-term problem there. Springer is the one where, because of the age, because he was like, it was his healthiest year last year and he was still about a league average guy, that's where my worry kind of lies.
Yeah, I would agree with that. You know, with Bo, he's so consistent over the long term, but there's plenty of inconsistency over the short term. He's really not hitting the ball well right now.
No.
Like, it's the process is always a little bit dicey with him in terms of walks and strikeouts and swing decisions and how he manages counts. but he kind of bails himself out of that because he just puts such a good swing on the ball, and he's not doing that at the moment. And if that continues over a lengthy period of time, you know, I'm talking, I don't know, a month and a half, something like that, another 3-4 weeks, then I'd be willing to entertain that there's something going on, because there really is a big drop off in his contact quality. But there's a lot of bow weirdness. He's a tough guy to parse. I'm okay with a kind of patient stance on him for now. Vladdy, again, you know, not what people want yet. It's worth noting that he has been more patient this year. His walk rate is in the 90th percentile right now. That's a big part of his story over the last couple of years, has been the swing decisions. There's still been some bad ones. Like, if you close your eyes and imagine a bad Vladdy swing from 2024, you won't have a hard time conjuring one. Like, there have been some yes. rough moments and some bad individual bats, but over the course of this, you know, eighth of a season, generally speaking, he's been good in that regard. And more often than not, it's just impossible to worry too much about the contact when he's making it, because you know the quality of contact will be good. So when the strikeout rate and the walk rate are both healthy with him, I think the quality of contact will get there. And we've seen that with a couple of the huge home runs too, that makes me think it's not like he's scaled back his swing or something like that. I think he's got a hot streak in him. We're going to see it at some point. But Springer, man, like, Springer seems to be that guy who's aging in such a way where he's becoming a more and more conservative hitter. Like, he is not striking out nearly as much. We've seen that kind of decline over the course of his Blue Jays career. He's walking quite a bit now. He's kind of looking a bit like a, you know, like a soft contact leadoff hitter at the moment. And that's not what you want from Springer based on what you're paying him and what his career has been. And just the fact that a number one hitter is super important. I think at this point we know that you're not necessarily looking for that guy who gets on base and doesn't do anything else. And it's funny that as his contact has faded, he's also started stealing bases too. So he really is kind of transforming into a different guy. Every trend with George Springer is contact up, power down. And his power used to be so special. And his contact rate and his ability to hit singles, I don't think is ever going to be unbelievable in such a way that compensates for that loss. So yeah, I'm with you that George Springer is the one to worry about.
I hate it too. And I hate it because, you know, I don't know if they've hammered on it a ton, but I've definitely heard him say, or quotes from him being relayed, that, you know, that's my job. I know this might be a buckism, and who knows what that filter does to anything, but, like, you know, his job is to get on base for those two guys behind him. And you know, you saying that and me thinking about hearing that, it makes me feel like maybe that's deliberate, and that would be not smart, I think, you know. And I wonder sometimes about that stupid fucking record, the leadoff home runs record, which, I mean, if he's not going to do the power thing, then it doesn't matter. But if he, because of that, ends up having, like, more of a leash in terms of a leadoff hitter, whereas I would much rather see him farther down the lineup and, you know, trying to tap into that power and maybe accepting some more strikeouts and some fewer walks, and really, you know, trying to be that guy rather than leaning into the leadoff hitter kind of thing. I think that would probably be a smarter way to play it. It's his career. But yeah, that's kind of the guy I would rather see him try to be. Maybe that will happen eventually, but I think he's sort of, they're beholden to put his name in first in the lineup most nights, just about every night, because of that record with the leadoff home runs, I think. And that's sort of a weird thing too, and they shouldn't do that.
I don't know if he's going to get it, you know? Like, it's no, Ricky Henderson at 81, and he's second at 57. Like, 24 leadoff home runs is a lot. I'm not doing the math in my head right now, but it's not that much less than half of what he's done thus far, right? So is he going to do that again at age 34 on? Like, I don't think so, especially not the way he's hitting.
Is he going to play another 5 years? Yeah.
So,
because I think he just got his 10-year service, I think, right? So yeah. I don't see
it's just something we see with aging hitters so often, is there's always something that is compromised. And I've always preferred to see the version of it where the guy says, all right, you know, my reaction time isn't quite what it used to be. I can't maybe hang in between pitches to the same degree. I'm going to cheat a lot and I'm going to hit bombs. Like, that's what Joey Votto has done, right?
100%.
Like, that's what Alex Rodriguez did late in his career. And I get that Springer doing that might make him, you know, less fit for this individual role he's had over the majority of his career. But I'd like to see him do that because his power has been truly special at times in his career. And often he hasn't put up that unbelievable home run total. Injuries have had to do with that, right? Like 39 is the most. He only has one other 34 home run season. But, you know, as recently as in between 2019 and 2021, he's a top 10 hitter in the game and one of the best power threats there is on a per at bat basis. And I can't imagine that that's as gone as it appears to be right now.
No, I think that's exactly true. And that at least gives you some hope that maybe they'll at some point decide, okay, let's maybe do that. Like that, he could still revert and try to maybe not mid-season, maybe mid-season. But like that is something that I think he could still look to bring back into his game and at the expense of some of the contact stuff that he's trying to do right now.
Okay, we are going to wrap up there for this week of Blue Jays Happy Hour, episode 125. As per usual, we love it when you guys leave ratings and reviews and tell people about the podcast, things of that nature to grow it. We got another review this week that I want to read. I mean, I'm not going to read the nicest part of it because I'm not that self-indulgent. But part of it said that we were the Steve and Hanky of Blue Jays podcast hosts, which I thought was an interesting reference. I spent some time considering who is Steve and who is Hanky. I don't know if you have thoughts on that, Stoughton.
I can't say I do.
I mean, I don't know. I think that it would be you as Steve and me as Hanky based on, you know, I think I'm a shorter stints type of guy.
Well, you're the closer for sure.
I'm closing this episode of the podcast. So anyway, you do not have to leave ratings and reviews that are that nice. We're not demanding compliments here by any stretch of the imagination, but we do enjoy when you engage with the podcast, and we will be with you again next week.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.